We're at 43 degrees now. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon. Another Inside Douglas County program and a check-in with State Representative Cedric Hayden. Thanks for being on this afternoon.
Thanks for having me on again, Kyle. We are getting moving along the legislature in a virtual fashion.
And I know it's been a busy day for a lot of people. In fact, one of the things that one of the other lawmakers told me earlier today was that sometimes you're in these virtual committee meetings, group sessions, whatever, kind of back to back to back for 12, 13 hours a day.
Yeah, that's correct. My longest day has been 12 and a half hours of, and I did excuse myself at 12 and a half hours saying, I got to go home, folks. So they can start early in the morning, 7:15, and go past 7, 8 o'clock at night. So there seems to be the ability for those that are kind of in the bubble of Salem to utilize this virtual world much more enhanced. My concern is that the regular Joe out there doesn't have the capability as well to get their thoughts to us.
And talk about maybe what you've been involved in committee-wise in the past couple of days.
So the committees are pretty much getting up in full swing now. I do want to point out that that means that with a few exceptions of rules and things like that getting passed, there really hasn't been any votes on legislation. So there is thousands of votes or thousands of pieces of legislation out there that will get weeded down through the committee process. The committee process has been doing for the last couple of weeks hearings. Now, what hearings are is where the proponents of the bill come and talk to us about why they think that's a good idea. And then anybody that wants to testify talks about why they think that wouldn't be a good idea. So we're going through that process virtually in healthcare policy. We're getting briefed in agency budgets under general government. That's a ways and means or a budgeting committee, getting briefed on things like big budget items in human services. I serve on the ways and means there. I was also recently asked to be on the work group or task force on something called the 1115 waiver. It gets a little bit into the weeds, but our Medicaid dual eligibility, Medicare, those are federally funded health care. If somebody's below a certain income level, but they do have the Medicare federally funded, they can also access the Medicaid. I was part of getting that into our health system policy on what's called 1115 waiver at the end of the Obama administration. Those waivers are 5 years, so I think the only legislator that is back on that committee to do our future waiver for Medicaid for the next 5 years, which is technically due June 21st, but it looks like we might get some extensions for COVID. So a lot of work going around that.
Well, and it seems like there's a lot just in the whole human services arena right now, given everything else that we're dealing with.
Yeah, there's going to be big challenges in funding under the human services. And one of the things that I mentioned this morning as we tackle the Medicaid, think of this as your CCO, dental care, physical health care funding. That has increased significantly, about 30% with the pandemic, with people not having jobs available to them. So we've had a shift from our commercial insurance, which helps off-pay the cost of that on our general budget, to the Medicaid system. So we're going to see a significant increase in funds needed to fund the Oregon Health Plan. And so we're starting to talk about how does that look. And one thing that I'm concerned about for those that follow this is our in-home services is a different type of waiver. It's a 1915 waiver called a K plan or a C plan. And that funds a lot of our individuals with disability. That's kind of a niche area that I like to study and work on. And I want to make sure that we don't pressure those funds with the overlying Medicaid because of the need for funds to fund that. So it's going to be a delicate balance. And I want to make sure that we don't cut critical services in that process.
Yet at the same time, a lot of these agencies are seeking more funding, yet less funds have come to the state because so many businesses have been impacted with all the COVID restrictions.
Yeah, and that kind of leads us into the next concern. I mean, once these legislative concepts get through the hearing process, particularly on the Revenue Committee and the Rules Committee that doesn't ever shut down, we're looking at legislation. Again, no legislation has passed, so I don't want to get people too concerned about legislation being passed at this point. It hasn't passed at this point, but it's coming forward. Some of the big items that is being looked at by our colleagues on the other side of the aisle is doing things like taxing the stimulus checks that came in during COVID. If you got a $600 check or you got a bump there in some help to get you by, they're looking at the taxation part of that. The other thing that they, and that's on an individual basis, and then they're also looking at taxing the what the payroll protection loan, known as the PPP loans, which allowed companies to keep their doors open, or even if they couldn't keep their doors open, it allowed them to keep their employees employed and getting a paycheck. There are some of the particularly senators on the Democrat side that are looking to disconnect us from the federal rules that say, you know, federal government's not going to tax that. So typically Oregon would follow and not tax that. They're looking to disconnect and tax that. And I think that would be detrimental to our employers out there and in order for them to maintain those jobs for those employees.
With all the meetings that are going on and yet the plan to not vote on legislation, could this result in kind of a logjam towards the end of the session?
Well, I believe it will. I'm not sure how that will be avoided. As far as actual floor sessions, we have to meet. Basically, the Constitution says we have to meet every 3 days. Well, we've gotten around that caveat by technically never closing the floor session, saying we're going to go into recess for another week. So that's just kind of a technical rule thing that we're doing. So every Tuesday, the House, and I believe it's Thursday on the Senate, they meet and we have reading of bills, meaning as the bills come into our legislative groups or committees, they have to go through the House floor first and be read and be assigned, you know, on our side by the Speaker's office. And so every Tuesday at 11 o'clock, we do meet. I was in Salem just yesterday, and it takes about 30 minutes, and they gavel out and move those bills. So we are in the building to some extent to do procedural moves, but again, no moves on legislation yet on the House floor. So the backlog that you bring up, depending on how many bills get processed through those committees, you know, if we don't start till April or May, that's going to be a very large volume to move through the building. And I'm not sure how we're going to accommodate that other than really long days and long schedules, which makes it hard for people to get their input in a short time.
And could that lead to potentially essentially not getting through everything and then having to turn around and have a special session right after?
Well, in every committee, particularly on the healthcare policy committees, we get probably the most bills of any of the committees. And so there's a process going on right now, kind of a triage process, if you will, that I work. I'm a vice chair of a couple of those committees, and I work with the chair, and we go through and we look at, okay, you know, this bill has some merit to move forward, or this bill has been kind of blessed by the powers to be that it has to move forward. And then we talk about the other ones that maybe this bill, you know, isn't the right fit for this session or something like that. So we do try and tone or weed the bills out that we don't think are going to go anywhere to help with that. The problem in the Oregon legislature is we as lawmakers have unlimited bill writing abilities, meaning, you know, I've got about 8 bills that I've introduced. Most of them have with healthcare policy. It's a one residential thing and a few things. But I think legislatures should be limited to about 25 bills so we don't have that huge, huge volume. But, you know, we have legislators that introduce 200 bills, and it just creates a huge volume of material to sort through.
And if you get towards the end and you get into very spirited discussions or long debates on things, I could see at the very end of the session, a lot of people from whichever side not very happy about where things stand.
Yeah, it's going to cause, typically what we've done before is, you know, get together as chairs and vice chairs and discuss the bills and say, okay, these are good idea bills. These are technical fixes. These are things that we need to move through the process. And we get those up front and we all move those through. And then we separate. These are controversial bills. I'll say, well, you know, my colleagues aren't going to like that bill. And so usually those get put at the end of it. And we have that discussion early on where public can engage in the committee process easier, much easier than they can in the virtual world. But we're not going to be able to have a really robust discussion with the public about these controversial bills. So they're going to end up having that discussion if we're opened on the floor. And it's going to create some chaos, if you will, in that system in order to get through those bills or get people educated on what those bills are.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. State Representative Cedric Hayden with us. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com. 1246 on Inside Douglas County from News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1. Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. State Representative Cedric Hayden, another legislative update. I'm sure as a lawmaker, you get just scads of email and guidance and statements from the governor's office and other folks in Salem. I know in my inbox just a few minutes ago, an update from the governor on outdoor sports guidance and more for the schools around the state that are struggling with that issue as well.
Yeah, so we do get a lot of emails every day. That's how people can communicate with us easier than trying to figure out the timing and the technology of getting on a virtual. We use Microsoft Teams, but it's, Zoom is kind of a generic word for that. And so you can still get a hold of my staff that are answering the phones full time, 5 days a week, 8 to 5. And you can call us and get a hold of us with concerns, or you can send emails. The volume of emails has increased, and so I can't promise you a response the same day, but we are responding to those emails as fast as we can. But one example of what you're talking about, just the huge volume of things coming out that I wanted to address here, not only our schools, but I wanted to cover, before we run out of time here, the risk bases that the governor has set out. Now, this came out with an effective date of February 4th for the counties that didn't change, and then an effective date coming up here of February 12th for those that changed. And so this is a really complicated thing to try and understand. I'll try and break it down a little bit. Basically, there's four risk county categories for COVID prevalence in a population, and the extreme risk is if over 2% of your population during that time frame has had a positive positive result, 2%, meaning 200 or more with 100,000 population, that county is an extreme risk. And if they've had 2% or less, they're in a high risk. Now, February 12th, with the effective date of February 4th for some of these, eating establishments can start to open limited amount. Now, we've got 14 counties in the extreme, 11 counties in the high. That includes Douglas County. If anybody's listening from Lane County is still in the extreme. Then you have two counties in the moderate and two counties in the low. So just to help clarify, I wanted to cover real quickly, if I can, eating establishments in a moderate risk. They can open indoors, that's allowed, but they have some capacity, things that are not to exceed capacity of 25% or 50 people, which is smaller, outdoor capacity 75%. And if you're a business owner saying, well, what does capacity mean? They define that as capacity. 75% capacity means that your establishment indoors has 86 square feet per person. 50% capacity is defined as 120 square feet per person inside your facility, and a 25% capacity is 240 feet per person. So there's some gyms can have a maximum of 25% capacity with 50 people. Indoor dining can have some capacity there. So I just wanted to point that out. And then one last comment on that, faith centers, churches and things like that are also having the ability to reopen. But in the notes on the fine print, the capacity limits on faith institutions are recommendations only. That has to do with a Supreme Court ruling that those aren't mandated. They're just recommendations on faith organizations.
And I know, I think that tied into essentially on the federal level overturning a decision in California where there'd been a lot of backlash to that. For all these people, and, you know, you mentioned restaurants. We were talking to State Representative David Brock Smith this morning. He put out legislation yesterday to make some parameter changes. His thoughts with us this morning essentially were that the playing field was not level between restaurants and bars and, for instance, big box stores.
Yeah, so they do have, you know, with the big box stores, they still have on their just looking through my indoor and outdoor shopping, the capacity limits there, you know, for your big box stores, there still are some restrictions. Is that equivalent? They're at 50% restriction. But think of a Walmart, how many square feet they have versus a small bar or mom and pop, you know, a small restaurant. If you go back to the detail in the fine print of the square feet, I don't have any data on, you know, restaurants and bars on an average, is that equivalent to our stores? But it seems like it is more limited for moms and pops. You know, the indoor dining is a maximum of 25%, and the commercial shopping is 50%. So there's an inequity there.
Now, education, we've seen shifts there. A lot of schools, for instance, Roseburg, back to in-person learning and hybrid for the older kids. Still a lot of work there, still a lot of clunkiness, honestly, between, trying to do some education in person and some remotely.
Yeah, and that's still ongoing. This is something on the I asked Director Allen directly the question this last week, as the governor chose to prioritize the teachers on vaccinations. And the talking points were coming from the governor's office through a person named Jeremy Van Hey and through the Oregon Health Director, Patrick Allen, was that, well, we got to do this to open our schools. So I asked, do we have a commitment from the educators, from their associations, teachers unions, whatnot, that once a vaccine is available to the teachers that we will reopen? The answer was no, we don't have that commitment to do that. And so they're looking at, you know, in April, a day a week or so. And so it's really up in the air, and there is some local school choice in that, but we don't have strong support yet, I feel, from our governor to make a pathway to get these schools reopened to the extent that I think they could safely do.
Yet at the same time, as we see schools reopen, we see small numbers of cases. And while the schools apparently work pretty hard to keep all the kids in these cohorts, sometimes all it takes is one some person maybe not knowing, or just due to schedule, sending a kid that's a little bit sick back to school and they probably shouldn't. Kid actually tests positive, and then suddenly you've got, you know, 60 kids plus some staff in quarantine for 10 days or so.
Yeah, and that's an issue. That's an issue for our small businesses as we work through that. And that looks to, you know, the access to the COVID vaccines for those that want to take that. We are just at over 100,000 Oregonians that have completed both the first and the second. The first round of Moderna and Pfizer vaccinations have an initial dose, and then 3 weeks later on the Pfizer, a second dose, and I think it's 4 weeks on the Moderna vaccination. We are waiting for a Johnson & Johnson, which is a little different type or more of a traditional type of vaccination that will be a single vaccination, doesn't require the cold storage, so it'll be easier to get out. But we're still at, you know, 100,000 that have completed that and 250,000 that have done their first shot and they're in the pipeline. We just recently opened up for seniors 80 and over are available to sign up for that vaccination. But really, it's going to come down to this term of herd immunity. When have we reached herd immunity in our populations? I mean, if you separate out, you know, all the teachers to get their vaccinations, well, they connect with the whole community, too.
All right, a lot going on and another busy day. State Representative Cedric Hayden, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
1257 and News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.